friends. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. And next guest is Greg Palace. Welcome back to the show, Greg. Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Hey, there he is.
Okay.
How are you?
It's a nice sunny day in on the left coast, or on the right coast here.
Oh, good. It actually was a pouring down rainstorm, like a hurricane on the way here, and now it's nothing but blue sky outside. So,
what's on your mind?
Texas weather. Well, anyway, first let me introduce you here.
Okay.
Greg Palast does TV for BBC Newsnight. He writes for The Guardian and has a new article in Harper's Magazine called OPEC on the March. He's the author of the book The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and he made the movie Bush Family Fortunes. Okay, now that you're fully introduced, here's what's on my mind. OPEC on the March, your article in Harper's, describes this battle between the traditional Republican oil men and the neoconservatives over what to do with all the oil in that unfortunate land. And it reminded me of the last time we spoke. I think, Greg, you told me that Paul Wolfowitz was surely committing perjury when he told the Congress that they were going to sell so much oil that it was going to pay for the Iraqi reconstruction, because surely he knew that they couldn't possibly sell that much oil or it would break OPEC and destroy everything. And it sounds to me like you found out that Wolfowitz really meant it when he said that, huh?
Well, I'm not sure that what Wolfowitz meant. What's very interesting is that, by the way, if you go to my website, you can click through to see my BBC television expose, about 12 minutes long, which we put on last week.
That's at gregpalast.com.
Yeah, G-R-E-G-P-A-L-A-S-T. Here's the trick. We were able to discover, and I say we, I'm working with a tremendous investigative reporter works with me, and we got our hands on a document that from inside the U.S. State Department, which said, which made it very clear that that the oil companies have now taken control and pushed out the neocons. What's happened is that we found out that within a couple of weeks of Bush's inauguration, that there was a meeting held in Walnut Creek, California, of oil industry people, Iraqi expats, convened by the State Department with the idea of planning an invasion and kind of forced coup d'etat, kind of Haiti, Grenada style.
Right. Well, this is the one where, and this is long, like you just said, long before September 11th. And the plan was to just bump off Saddam, replace him with a general under him, hopefully, and not have a bunch of turmoil and overthrow.
That's right. And one of the problems, and then what happened was that after Afghanistan on September 11th, the neocons seized control of the levers of power, Wolfowitz, Rumsfeld, and their gang. And they changed the State Department plan. See, keep in mind, by the way, that this whole idea that Colin Powell, you know, his own little campaign that he had nothing to do with the invasion of Iraq, so he didn't want his hands off that disaster. No, he was against occupation. He was all for a quick hit, a quick invasion and overthrowing Saddam and getting out, you know, which gives us control of the oil. But the right wing had the idea of remaking Iraq as a little Chile on the Tigris, a free market miracle in Mesopotamia there. And the result was that would require massive long-term occupation. So we discovered through the transom, this is the Wall Street Journal, a 101-page document which laid out a whole plan for remaking Iraq's economy, including the sell-off of all of Iraq's oil fields. It's right in there at page 73. You can see that document, part of it, on my website. But the odd thing is that the opposition to selling off Iraq's oil fields, besides a couple of insurgents, you know, knocking out some Humvees, but, you know, what do we care about that? That's just kind of, you know, Chicanos that got conscripted. But other than a few sore-headed insurgents, which we can take care of, the real insurgency came out of Houston, out of Texas. The big oil company said, you are not going to privatize, that is, sell off the oil fields, which may surprise you. But
isn't that funny? The communists, the ex-communists, neocons, they wanted to privatize. But the capitalists, they want the state to own the oil.
That's right, for a very good reason. A state only, you know, you have a $50-plus barrel oil right now, and as a result, you have record profits of every single major oil company on the planet. Shell Oil's up 400%. ConocoPhillips has had the biggest profits they've ever seen. ExxonMobil, you name it, they've just been ringing that the cash register bell. And that's care of this massively high OPEC-driven price.
Well, there have been people who said that that's why we kept the sanctions on Iraq all that time anyway through the 1990s, was to keep their oil off the market, to keep the price artificially high.
Bingo. And what's happened is that the neocons, behind privatization was a plan by neocons to ramp, to divide up Iraq's production amongst competing operators, ramp up the production through the ceiling to 6 million barrels a day, busting the OPEC quotas, busting the OPEC cartel. Prices would fall through the floor, and Saudi Arabia's power would implode, political power would implode. That was the neocon idea.
And this is why that last part, that is definitely then why the oil men stepped in and said no.
Yeah, so the oil men said, no, they're going to be nice, good members of OPEC. You're not going to bust sanctions. And plus, there's another problem. There's a couple of other problems with the sell-off. See, when you privatize, it doesn't go to the big international oil companies, what they call the IOCs. It goes to cronies of people like Chalabi and the other puppets we throw into place. We saw this in Russia. We saw this in Kazakhstan. Wherever you have privatization, basically you have local bandits take control. And so the big international oil companies are actually locked out of those deals. What they prefer is state ownership, good membership in OPEC, which is controlled by, at the point of, at gunpoint by the state. And then you have profit-sharing agreements in which the oil and the profits are sucked out by the big oil companies. So, and the local guys are left out.
So Iraq still gets to own the oil, but the American companies get to do all the processing and distribution.
Yeah, well, they suck it out. I mean, the American oil companies build the pipes, put in the oil wells, and it's basically it's not just the Americans. American and British mostly, and Dutch operators who come in and suck up the oil, build the infrastructure, suck up the oil, and so it goes. Now that plan, so it turns out we had a guy named, well, there were two people that were put in charge of Iraq's field. One was a guy named Phil Carroll out of Houston. And now Carroll was the CEO of Shell Oil USA and was sent by Bush to run Iraq's oil ministry. He's so-called senior advisor. That meant
Help me with the timeline here. He was sent when? Brought in by Jay Garner or after Garner was already fired?
He was brought in actually 6 months before the invasion, he told me. 6 months before invasion to advise the government on what to do with another country's oil. And then he was parachuted in a month after the invasion to take control of things. And he was a very establishment guy like Jay Garner, who was our pasha in Iraq from the beginning. But he and Garner did not think much of these privatization plans. That resulted in Garner being fired. You don't fire, however, the ex-CEO of Shell Oil. That don't happen, in our government. So he laid down the law to Jerry Bremer, who became pasha number two for us. And he told me, he told Bremer in no uncertain terms, he didn't care about some little freaking plan written by a bunch of neocon pinheads. There would be no privatization of Iraq's oil on his watch. End of statement. That's a quote from Carroll. Bremer had the official title, but Carroll is the oil man, so he's the guy who lays out the rules. Carroll then had enough of the game and turned it over to a guy named Rob McKee also.
Hang on right there, Greg. Mm-hmm. He had enough because Bremer said, no, we're still going to do this anyway?
No. Bremer doesn't tell oil guys that he's...
This is my question, because Paul Bremer is Henry Kissinger's protege, and
that's
Henry
right.
Kissinger is the Rockefeller's man, and the Rockefellers are the oil men.
Well, that's correct. Now, what was very interesting, in fact, is that despite the fact that Bremer is Henry Kissinger's guy... he's also a player, and he was sent there at the bequest and to carry out the plans of the neocons. But, again, he's a player. When Phil Carroll, when the oil company guys say you ain't doing, you can privatize their banks, you can change their trade laws, their copyright laws, because Sony wanted the laws changed. By the way, if you're wondering who wrote up the neocon plan, there's a neocon plan. Of course, it's guys like Wolfowitz. But the guys who put in the details were people like Grover Norquist, the super lobbyists for the corporations, who dropped in things like copyright law changes, who dropped in things like trade rule changes, change in the tax code, all that stuff which benefited his corporate cronies. So it was really a lobbyist document fronted by the neocons.
Well, so if Bremer could not stand up to Philip Carroll, the ex-Shell CEO, then why did Carroll resign?
So Carroll then, actually told me that he's on several corporate boards, and there's a limit to the leave of absence you can take on these corporate boards before you lose your nice little seat. So he turned it over to trusted hands. He turned over a guy named Rob McKee of ConocoPhillips Oil. And McKee had earned $25 million, by the way, in his last year at Conoco. And he became the so-called senior advisor to the Iraq oil ministry. In other words, the guy in charge. And by the way, an interesting little thing is that McKee, while he did, so that there'd be no so-called conflict of interest, he had no association with Conoco when he went to Iraq. But he still maintained the chairmanship of a subsidiary of Halliburton Corporation, an oil services subsidiary of Halliburton. So he's both our guy representing, controlling the Iraq's oil ministry and chairman of the Halliburton subsidiary. McKee didn't want any more games. And therefore, he said it's now time to establish that state oil company and lock that in. So he called for the State Department to rewrite the plans because that neocon plan was still outstanding, even though it wasn't going to be put in place. So there was and the writing of that, the actual terms, fell to that steady good hands at the James Baker III Institute in Houston. So now, for those who don't know who Jim Baker was, he was Secretary of State under and Secretary of Treasury under Bush and Secretary of Treasury under Reagan. And he is a lawyer who represents ExxonMobil Corporation and the Saudi Arabian government. And so his institute, wrote in the details with a bunch of oil company people, and, you know, the State Department put their name on it. Now, they try to keep that secret, but we got tipped off and went through a six-month legal battle with the State Department. First, them claiming over the Freedom of Information Act. First, they're claiming that this oil company guided study did not exist, or a plan did not exist for Iraq's oil. And then, in fact, I'm standing here looking at the document which doesn't exist right now.
Oh, really?
Options for developing a long-term sustainable Iraqi oil industry. So, which is, I think is very good. We're giving them the so-called options. Not that any Iraqis are involved in what their options are. But, you know,
it's clearly not their business.
Yeah, that's not their business. It's our business. And by the way, when they say options, it makes it sound like they have some choices, the Iraqis. There are seven options, and every one of them is a state-owned oil company. Just the various types, you know, and
this report was, or the third plan was written up in December of 2003, right?
That's right.
So how long has it been in effect now?
So now they've been putting it, they basically brought back in the Saddam's oil people. Saddam had these oil technocrats who, were all Ba'athists, of course. Kind of the way that you really had to be a member of the Communist Party if you were a big cheese in the Soviet Union. So these guys are all Ba'athists, but they're oil guys who all were very tight with the oil, with the British and American oil companies, like Tamir Gadban. And when we had the neocons really were at their height, and we put in the convicted bank swindler Ahmed Chalabi as our the leader of a puppet government for a while, he got rid of the Ba'athists. Right, you know, they're evil Ba'athists. Instead, put in these kind of short-fingered characters, and suddenly $1 billion in oil is missing. But when McKee came in, the game stopped. Chalabi was arrested and then let go. But the key thing which hadn't been noticed was that the Ba'athists were brought back into power at the oil ministry. They're the guys who get along very well with the U.S. oil companies, the British oil companies, and so that they were putting back that state oil company over the past year. Now there is a little bit of problem with Chalabi and his oil and oily guys trying to come back in right now as we speak. In fact, yesterday the Wall Street Journal reported that how these oil guys are trying to grab the oil ministry back under any new government. The chance that the U.S. oil companies are going to allow this type of game to proceed is quite minimal. But so now we have what's really going on here is big oil has decided that Iraq will have a state oil company, which will be a member in good standing of OPEC. OPEC just had last week, OPEC had its meeting. Iraq was there. Iraq was a good member, voted as a good member of the cartel. And so that's what the oil companies wanted, where you're going to have a controlled, limited production out of Iraq under profit-sharing agreements with, the big oil majors. And that's what it's all about.
That's how America sells free markets and democracy.
Right. Free markets and democracies. We're going to tell you what to do with your oil. And, of course, needless to say, well, there's problems with the neocon plan, but the idea of, using free markets to bust an oil cartel is not such a bad idea on its face. There is one other problem with that plan, which the oil companies have pointed out, which is that, as Jay Garner, the general we sent in, I spoke with him, he said, you want to privatize the oil, you better have, a big occupation force to shoot the Iraqis trying to get it back. It ain't going to happen. He said it's a fight you don't want to take on. You're going to have more enemies than what you started with.
So, and you said before that really the neoconservative will to break OPEC is a means to an end because they believe their true enemy is Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I mean, let's not, it's not like the neocons are crying for the American consumer, oh, golly, we're being shafted by these nasty oil companies and OPEC. Their goal was to smash the power of what they saw as an Arab cartel, and that because the money of the Arab cartel, of course, gives them enormous, overwhelming, substantial political power in Washington. And that was the objection of neocons. But unfortunately, it's tough enough to take on Saudi power just because of that amount of money. But when Wolfowitz just found a guy with bigger teeth than his own, big oil.
Yep. Well, and it's funny. I wish there was somebody to root for here. And I guess if I have to root for anybody, it's going to be the oil companies because at least businessmen look a little more long term than these crazy ideological neoconservatives. Hey, it's the Weekend Interview Show. I'm talking with Greg Palast from the BBC. He wrote a great new article for Harper's, and we'll be right back. My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and we're talking with Greg Palast from the BBC and The Guardian and The Observer. His website is gregpalast.com. He's got a great new piece in Harper's Magazine called OPEC on the March. His book is called The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and his movie is The Bush Family Fortunes. Now, Greg, before we went out to break, I was basically saying, I guess if I have to, I'm rooting for James Baker. Am I crazy?
You're crazy, but it's a good idea. Both. Yeah, it is. We're in this nutty position that we have to count on guys like Jim Baker to save us from the berserker element. Because as a Fala Al-Jaburi, who is an oil industry, basically he's an advisor to Hess Oil and to OPEC and to Goldman Sachs, real establishment, he was saying, look, the plan to privatize Iraq's oil was a big selling point for the insurgents. They were, because what do Iraqis have? They don't have big broccoli farms, they've got oil. He's saying that the pitch line was, once the rumor got out that everything was going to be sold off, is that, look, these foreign billionaires are stealing your children and your grandchildren's legacy, so protect your country, and blow up the pipeline.
Yeah, but Greg, I learned on TV the other day that the only reason there's an insurgency is because Iran and Syria.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was the Secretary of Defense lying again.
I misspoke. I was only talking from the facts.
Oh, my mistake. I'm sorry.
So what happened is that the oil companies were saying, hey, guys, we don't want... It's not a lot of fun. We want the oil fields, but we don't want them on fire. These guys have worked in the Mideast a long time, these oil companies, and they know how to keep the lid on, or they know how to blow up the situation when they need it blown up. But, you know, they really, really don't need, field that they have to defend with tanks.
Thing is, though, Greg, I mean, it's easy to understand how with, you know, regular gasoline going for $2.10 a gallon or something, even in here in Texas, who knows what it is in California or someplace.
Yeah, like $2.50, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe even more than that. This is, I can see, you know, short term, this is great for the profits of ExxonMobil or Chevron Texaco or whatever. However, over the long term, this is terrible for our economy. This is causing all kinds of unintended consequences and reverberations all throughout the economy, having gas prices this high.
Well, it depends what you mean by whose economy. By the calculation, Harper is in the, in fact, this expose about the document is in Harper's, which is just out this week, the April issue, so pick that up. But you'll see a calculation in there that I brought over from the OECD, which makes these calculations. And roughly 1 million American jobs have been lost to the high OPEC prices. 1 million jobs. Now, you would think that that might kind of disturb our team in Washington. But they got elected with those 1 million jobs, reelected, or apparently so, with those 1 million jobs missing. It's not their jobs, right?
Sure, and the people who lost their jobs just make for great soldiers.
Yeah, and so exactly, it's a recruitment technique.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So you have to decide who's the when you talk about the economy, it's whose economy. And the other thing is, what you'll find in the article, is that the guy that made this decision about backing OPEC and Big Oil is Dick Cheney. And that's the key to this story.
Isn't that interesting? Yes, we have to rely on Dick Cheney to be the voice of reason. Make sure everything's taken care of.
Darth Janey, you know, is the guy who's saving us from more mayhem. Pretty scary stuff.
Yeah, well, I still don't forgive him because he's the one who hired all these crazies in the first place.
That's right. He's and as the ringmaster, he's the one that let them loose last year and then now has had to call back his dog.
Right. Hey, everybody, run the newsstand, get the brand new Harper's. The article is called OPEC on the March. The website is GregPalast, PALAST.com. The book is Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Thanks again, Greg, for coming on the show.
Scott, you're great.
Bye. Take it easy. All right, my friends, we'll be right back with Chalmers Johnson, author of Sorrows of Empire. Stay tuned.